In a special edition of Indiana Week in Review, the top political stories in Indiana in 2012. That plus a year-end roundtable and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 28, 2012. Ice
Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, in a special edition, a look back on the biggest political stories of 2012 in Indiana, a memorable election year.
Richard Murdoch had the highest profile of any Indiana politician in 2012. He defeated six-term Senator Dick Lugar in the May GOP primary and then lost the November election to Democrat Joe Donnelly following a controversial debate comment about rape and abortion.
Life is that gift from God, and I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
For Lugar, residency was a big issue, as opponents pointed out that he no longer lives in the house that was listed on his voter registration. Residency was also an issue for congressional candidate David McIntosh, who claimed Anderson as his home while his family stayed in Virginia.
My kids are not the issue in this campaign.
Do you pay taxes in Virginia?
I pay taxes in Indiana, and I pay taxes in Virginia.
You work in Washington, D.C.
Right now, I'm working in Indiana.
Running for Congress.
Running for Congress and serving on boards here in Indiana that keep me busy.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm going to go.
No right to work! No right to work!
Right to work was also a big issue, as a Democratic walkout and union rallies failed to put a stop to the passage of a new law backed mostly by Republicans. And who can forget State Representative Bob Morris, who labeled the Girl Scouts pro-gay.
Wait till he finds out the Keebler elves are all gay. He won't be able to eat another cookie in his life.
Secretary of State Charlie White was convicted of all things of voter fraud and removed from office.
Effective immediately, I will recuse myself from any partisan political activities or commentary.
Mitch Daniels left politics for academia, becoming the next president of Purdue University. Republicans won a supermajority in the Indiana House without the governor's help. Democrats, meantime, experienced dysfunction as Pat Bauer was deposed as minority leader in the middle of the campaign. Democrat Glenda Ritz pulled off the upset of the year, defeating incumbent Tony Bennett easily in the race for state school superintendent. And while John Gregg's folksy ads got him close in the race for governor, Mike Pence won with a promise to cut taxes.
This tax cut will put $500 million directly back into Indiana's economy.
And by year-end, Dick Lugar was back in the spotlight, honored by many, including the president, as he headed to the next step of his career with a lecture to fellow senators.
I hesitate to describe our current state as the most partisan ever, but I do believe that as an institution, we have not lived up to the expectations of our constituents to make excellence in governance our top priority.
What was the biggest story of 2012 in Indiana politics? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. So, Mike, what was the biggest story in Indiana politics?
Indiana political story of the year, in my opinion, clearly was Senator Lugar's loss to Richard Murdoch in the primary. After 36 years in the United States Senate and being the biggest vote getter in the history of our party for so many, many years, for him to lose that primary was a huge story.
Biggest story?
Joe Donnelly's election as a moderate Democrat. He took a big risk running in the first place. Most people gave him no chance, and he managed to project himself and what you saw was what you got, and people liked what they saw, and he got elected.
So we got different takes, but the Senate race is still the answer. You go with the Senate race?
I think that's a good choice, but I'm going to go with the Superintendent of Education race. I think Glenda Ritz's victory really redefined the potential for grassroots campaigning in Indiana, and I thought it was a very big story.
I think it's Dick Lugar's loss, and you made a good point, Jim, when you said it sounded initially as if they were giving different answers, but I would argue, as I think you did, that it's one and the same. Had Dick Lugar not lost, we wouldn't be having the Joe Donnelly discussion. So not only did you have the end of illustrious 36-year tenure in the Senate, for a lot of Hoosiers, that's the only, Dick Lugar's just been the only senator they know. It's a constant. So that's significant, but that also set into effect so many other dominoes started to topple, and that's what led us to the Joe Donnelly story.
Well, you could even say Murdoch was the biggest story, but it was clearly the Senate race, in my opinion. Okay, what was the biggest issue of the year?
I think there were two, the Republican wars on women and the wars on workers, and I think both of them cost him in specific elections.
Biggest issue?
The Obama record. Democrats ran against it, Republicans ran against it. And Obama, who went from winning here eight years ago, to losing Indiana, was the biggest issue in the campaign.
Biggest issue.
You know, the easy thing is to talk about fiscal policy and the economy, but I'm going to say actually this is the year of residency. This residency question seemed
in
to
the
play
primary,
a part
it was certainly
in so many races. So more so than in the past that I recall.
You know, I think that the biggest issue on that is probably the same that John was talking about. I think that absolutely was the case. And I really hadn't thought about it until you just said that, but I think you're absolutely right.
I think the biggest issue was rape and abortion.
The war on women.
Well, right to work was...
Right to work, the war on women, and the war on workers.
It swung a race. All right. Biggest mistake, Mike?
Clearly the Murdoch gaffe in the final debate, that quote, where he still had a chance to win at that point, with 14 minutes left to go in that debate, probably lost the United States Senate seat for him.
Biggest mistake?
I think the biggest mistake was Richard Lugar's in not establishing a residence in Indiana. I think the outcome of that primary could have at least been different if that wasn't such a burning issue.
Yeah, I think that and I didn't think this was going to be the case. I didn't think they would get caught off guard, but I think the Lugar campaign was caught off guard and wasn't prepared. And then when they got knocked off the issues that they wanted to talk about, they couldn't recover, and I was really surprised by that.
Once again, variations on the same theme. I think if you look at specific incident, Mike's right. It was that gaffe in that debate. But broader question, I'm sure there are Republicans who would like to have a mulligan in the primary. If they had known that seat, which had been a tried-and-true Republican seat and would have been a tried-and-true Republican seat again in November had Dick Lugar been on the ballot, they might say that their biggest mistake was turning against him.
I think the Murdoch comment was the biggest mistake, but compounded by the fact that he didn't explain it well, and then on election night, blamed the voters and later blamed the media. Best ad.
Oh, I think the John Gregg umbrella ad was the best ad.
Really?
Yeah.
There wasn't, other than I'm folksy, there wasn't much of a message in that one, was there?
Well, you know. This is who I am,
right.
And that's part. Voters vote for people they like, generally speaking, and it was very effective that way.
Best ad.
Best ad was the roadmap ad Mike Pence's campaign for governor, because people are hungry for people to talk about what they're going to do. He did, John didn't, and that was a huge ad.
This is a great topic because this year, more than any other year in the past, we have a lot to choose from because of the Supreme Court decision opening the door to so much. Not third party, but independent advertising. So we got a lot to choose from. And I'll say that one that I thought got a lot of talk and had an impact, the desired effect, was the mailer that was sent on behalf of the Donnelly campaign, which had used Murdoch's own words against him, the talking greeting card, if you will.
Okay, was it independent expenditure?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Best ad.
I think the best ad were the first two that John had, because I do think it introduced him in an effective fashion. We'll talk about the other ones later, but the first two I thought were very effective.
I think those were maybe the most memorable ads. I think maybe the most effective ad was the Donnelly ad that just compiled
Murdoch phrases
which is basically the greeting card, except
right.
They had the benefit of actually hearing Murdoch say it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The worst ad.
John Gregg's umbrella ad. because it didn't make any sense. It didn't move any numbers. That and all of the ads from outside groups on both sides of the Murdoch-Donnelly race.
Yeah.
Every single ad that Richard Murdoch made.
His campaign, not the outside groups, you're
no,
saying.
No, I'm talking about his campaign.
Okay.
I think it was the last three John Gregg ads in that initial series were not good. But I also think it was all of those Club for Growth ads. Zero return on their investment. Zero.
I'm going to stick with independent expenditure, and I'm going to stick with a direct mail piece. And it was the one, the passing the torch of leadership, where after bashing Dick Lugar for yeah. months and months and months, all of a sudden you see these two arms wearing, you know, pinstripe suits, passing this torch of leadership, suggesting that Richard Lugar is passing it to Richard Murdoch. And if we saw how quickly the Lugar campaign, or staff, I should say, responded, saying, this is a campaign that was built on falsehoods. That, you know, I mean, these are Republicans talking about other Republicans.
Pick any super PAC ad. Has anybody ever seen a positive super PAC ad?
No.
It doesn't happen. Okay. All right. Most surprising upset.
That's easy. Tony Bennett.
Glenda Ritz over
Glenda
Tony Bennett.
Glenda Ritz's surprise victory and an excellent victory over Tony Bennett.
I agree that that's the biggest surprise.
I'll make it three.
Well, I've got to go on record as four.
Okay.
So I think that's pretty good.
Let's make it five. Okay. The defeated politician most likely to return, Mike?
Probably not to the Indiana House of Representatives, but I see Peggy Welch at some point coming back into Indiana politics.
Okay.
I see Brendan Mullen coming back in that district as well.
I do too. I think that Jackie Walorski is going to really have an interesting first term, and I think she's going to give him issues to run on.
Oh yeah.
That is likely to be a little bit of a swing district. I mean, as much as we have one in Indiana.
Yeah, he was the Democratic candidate in the second district.
There was a guy who ran for state senate up on the north side. Tim Delaney. Tim Delaney.
Yeah.
Yes, that is relation, of course, to Ann. I think he ran a good campaign, and I would be shocked if we didn't see him seek public office again in the future.
All right. Add Carlos May to the list, who lost to Andre Carson. Okay. The winning politician most likely to be challenged again, Ann.
I think Mike Pence. He didn't get 50% of the vote. I think he'll be challenged again.
Joe Donnelly, clearly. I think that he'll have an interesting voting career in the Senate. I think he will be challenged in the statewide race for Senate again.
Yeah. They both will. I mean, that's the easiest question on here. I
don't need,
unless you're a state rep or a member of Congress in a heavily gerrymandered district, you are going to get challenged. And I would suggest, though, what's changed in the political climate now is that the challenges used to come from the other party. Now they tend to come from within during the primary season.
Well, that won't happen to Joe Donnelly. No.
Well, you know, I think that Glenda Ritz, if she gets a chance to run again, I'm saying that, you know, they may do away with that as an elective office at some point in the next 4 years. And so I think she'll be challenged one way or the other.
I think that's the answer. The first Democratic state school superintendent in 40 years. You can count
on. And you're saying it may be the last.
And a woman, but also capable of running a very good grassroots campaign against anybody who votes to abolish that office.
Well, okay. And you were for abolishing that office before.
That was before it was held by a woman.
All right. Best campaign surrogate, Mike.
Karen Pence was clearly a tremendous campaign surrogate throughout this campaign. She could go places and do things, make speeches for him, and she was just terrific.
I think the tour by Evan Bayh and Bill Clinton really fired up the troops for Joe Donnelly.
Evan Bayh did some touring. Bill Clinton did one rally. Right?
Well, that's okay. Yeah. That's a tour. Right. That's Indiana.
Okay.
I'm not impressed by surrogates, and I don't think they can have a positive effect the way they're used. I think it's, you know, I think it's superfluous to the process.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I mean, Bill Clinton clearly is the best there is in that regard. But you had some surrogates who were actually didn't have the desired effect. Remember, after the Murdoch, and we'll go back to Murdoch again with the gaffe or the comment. I guess I don't know if it was a gaffe or not, but it was a comment about rape and how it was sanctioned by the Lord. You had some of his surrogates who were coming in who basically, at least temporarily, said, wait, not so fast, which, of course, shined an even brighter spotlight on the fact that he had made the comment that was so out of sync. So
the question was best campaign surrogate.
I don't even remember what the question was.
Well, so that's okay. All right, so we'll go to the next question. The next question is worst campaign surrogate, and I'm going to say that it was Kelly Ayotte who was to come in for Murdoch on the day after he made that comment, and the fact that she had to cancel her visit told everybody what they needed to know there.
I'm with you on that one.
All right, worst campaign surrogate.
Nancy Pelosi coming in for a state dinner that nobody wanted to have their picture taken with her.
The best and worst were the independent, the PACs, the super PACs, because they did all the bidding, all the dirty work. In a lot of cases, you had candidates who could sit back and say, I'm going to take the high road, because they knew full well that somebody was going to do the heavy lifting. So that was the good and the bad of surrogacy.
Well, by my definition, I think they can only do poorly or do harm to the campaigns. And I'm going to say anybody that came on behalf of
McIntosh.
I hate surrogacy.
All right. Best campaign strategy. Mike.
Clearly, the roadmap for Indiana had kept him focused. Mike Pence ran a very disciplined campaign, and that's what won it for him.
Now, I think Joe Donnelly's strategy was
the rope-a-dope. Just let him punch himself
out. Well, there was that. But at the same time, his opponent was self-destructive. He was telling people what he believed in. And he had no embarrassing moments. He also stuck to the principles that he's been elected and voted for in the past. And people like what they saw. It's a good strategy.
But he kept his mouth shut while his opponent imploded.
That's a good strategy.
It
worked. I think I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I'm going to say Glenda Ritz's strategy, which revealed itself gradually and really only became fully clear on election day as she rolled up an impressive return.
And what's interesting about that, it really shows that grassroots organizing still has a place in modern elective politics.
I think with the Internet. Yeah. I mean, that's the big difference.
Social media.
With the social media and the Internet, that's what, it doesn't still have a place. It has a brand new place.
And she was able to tap into the zeitgeist and the concern that was all part of the changes that were being made.
You
and
so give our friend Robin Winston credit for running that deal. They did a good job.
They did a very good job on that. No question about it.
Okay, most memorable quote.
Oh, come on. I think we've got unanimity on the fact that it's what God intended.
Yeah.
No, I have to agree.
God intended that we all agree.
All right.
And it's also the tagline to this year's Gridiron Dinner.
What's the date on that, John?
All March 5th, John. Thank you.
Okay. Next category, the biggest waste of campaign funds. Mike?
I disagree with what was said earlier. I think the John Gregg whole Mayberry ad campaign early on wasted a lot of time where he could have talked about what he wanted to do for the future of the state of Indiana. He didn't do it, and it was wasted money.
He got closer than any other losing candidate for governor.
Not because of that. He wasted all that early money. He could have been telling people what it is he wanted to run for. He didn't do it. And I think it was a kind of a stupid thing to do, quite frankly. He didn't win.
He came pretty darn close.
He was supposed to be
yesterday's news by the nominating process. I think the biggest waste was Tony Bennett's ads. I mean, they had absolutely no impact. He left money in the bank, and it was the shot heard round the block.
Well, and that's my point on the Tony Bennett ads, is that a lot of the money was left in the bank. They didn't think they would need it, and they were sorely mistaken by that, and so it was wasted money.
Well, on the national level, I know we're talking about Indiana, but Karl Rove, but there was an intersection because it was Crossroads GPS.
Right. He spent a bunch of money here.
Of Karl Rove with Indiana. And I forget the exact statistic now, but if you look at it on a return on investment.
I believe he spent 1.02% of the money he spent went to winners.
Yeah.
And that gets me to my pick. It's Chris Ciccola and the Club for Growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Ciccola had a personal stake in the Senate race because he'd been defeated by Donnelly, and he spent millions in the primary and in the general.
And Luger didn't help him when he ran.
Badly spent.
Yeah,
okay. Most embarrassing politician, Ann.
Oh, I'm going to give that to Bob Morris, the representative who attacked the Girl Scouts for being pro-gay and pro-abortion and pro-commie or whatever else it was.
Mike?
As painful as this is to say, I got to say Richard Murdoch, because they used his own quotes, not just the last one that everybody remembers, but a series of those quotes over the campaign about inflicting his will and so forth and so on. To me, that was the most embarrassing.
Both great picks, both on my list, so I'll leave it to others to break the tie.
I can't break that tie because it really is true. And, I mean, when you're the subject of late-night comedians...
You know, you're having a bad day.
You're having a really bad session, and he just continued to do it. That's the thing.
I would suggest that Charlie White is deserving of the most embarrassing politician. It's not often that you get removed from statewide office.
As well, the highest election official for election fraud,
that's,
yes.
Yeah. That's the irony there.
Okay.
Is it sad that we have more nominees for this list than just about any other category we've talked about?
Yes. Our most effective political action committee, Mike.
I don't even know if this is true, but I'm going to give it to them anyway, and that's the ISDA. Yeah. And I say that because I don't think they had as big a role in that victory as did the social media network that her campaign put together, but I'm going to say ISDA.
Well, I think ISDA, clearly. They weren't the only part of that campaign, but they were a large part of that campaign, and they were the most effective.
And they get credit.
Well, that's the real thing, is they're getting credit for it. It shows that there's a pulse still beating in that faction, and that's important for Democrats, especially when they're looking at such a minority in the House. And that kind of support is going to be critical if they're going to regain any kind of footing in the House.
ISDA is the right answer, but in the interest of trying to say something different, the various PACs that were involved in building such a supermajority in the Indiana House for Republicans, I mean, now it is walkout proof.
It has nothing to do with the PACs. It has to do with the maps.
Well, but there was...
The maps did it.
ISDA.
I said that was the right answer. I'm trying to be novel, but...
All right. Most improved politician, 2012.
I think John Gregg. I think John Gregg really rose to the occasion and did very, very well in forums that were not familiar to him. So I think John Gregg.
Dr. Larry Bushon, congressman from the down
the
south
8th district,
Indiana.
Yep.
Clearly, from the first time he ran to this time, it was dramatically better.
Most improved.
Most improved. Donnelly had to step up his game. I mean, it was a different platform, different scope. Had to go to a statewide race.
I think that's a good choice.
I think it's a good choice, too. But I'm going to go with somebody who's been there for a long time, had a good game for a long time, but really brought it this year and ended up with a supermajority. And hey, Brian Bosma had a great year.
Yeah, he did.
That's a good choice, too. I think he also put Andre Carson on the list. Mm-hmm. He's improved a lot.
Yes.
All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the absence of an election in 2013 affect your life? Your choices are A, yes, I live for elections, B, no, I need a break, or C, ugh, more car ads. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Now for our wrap-up roundtable, the big awards, Rookie of the Year in Indiana Politics, Mike.
Clearly, Susan Brooks, winner for Congress, first time she's ever ran for office. Great job.
Came out of, what was it, a six
candidate primary
in the
one
fifth
skirt,
district?
All suits, yeah.
What, yeah.
I'm giving it to my son, Tim Delaney. I think he ran an excellent
campaign. He ran a great campaign.
He worked hard, and he's got all kinds of kudos from all kinds of people.
And I think, as John indicated earlier, and I'm sure you certainly believe, he's got a good political future ahead of him. So I think that's a good choice. But I'm going to have to go with Susan Brooks because that doubled the number of women in Congress from Indiana as well, with Jackie Willarski.
First Republican female member of Congress from Indiana since 1959.
Cecil Hardin.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
You know, it depends on how you define a rookie. But I'll say Glenda Ritz, even though she's a veteran educator, certainly. She was new to this mm-hmm. realm, and I'd say for the reasons we spent a few minutes earlier in the show talking about, that would be my pick.
My choice is Susan Brooks. Okay. Politician of the Year.
I'd give it to Richard Lugar. I mean, I think all the kudos he's had since his loss in the primary indicates how much he's given to Indiana, and I think the outpouring of affection and opportunities for him in the future, he deserves that award.
Mike Pence, because he ran a statewide campaign for governor and never had a negative word said about his opponent in this day and age, unheard of.
Well, and if we use the Time Magazine approach, which is it's neither good or bad, it's just the impact, Dick Lugar, for the reasons we talked about earlier.
Yeah, you know, that is true, and he's still, I mean, in the well of the Senate, was talking about important issues and was still a viable voice in the last week, so that's true. But I'm going to go with Joe Donnelly. I mean, He might have won that election without the problems that Murdoch had, but the fact that he had the courage to go into that election before he knew that Richard Lugar was going to retire, I think, and then winning, makes him a politician.
I think if you take the Time magazine approach, though, it's Murdoch. I mean, he's the guy who got.
I thought this was supposed to be an honor.
It's supposed to be the most.
Time magazine says it's not an honor. That's why
he's got the most attention. All right, take your own approach. Party of the year, party of the year in Indiana, Mike.
There's absolutely no question. The Republican Party had a great year. Majority in both houses. Vast majority of Congress, governor, treasurer. You know, they name it.
Hard to dispute, isn't it?
Dan Parker's retirement party.
Nicely done, Ann. Well done.
It wasn't the Tea Party, I know that.
Let's say no, we can't say libertarians. We haven't said it the whole time. I just said it, but it doesn't count. Republicans this year.
And this is Indiana, right? Not nation. Indiana Republican.
Yeah, that's Indiana Week in Review. It's Republican, by the way. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.